I've always been such a big animal lover. Something in my personality just really makes me love like all living animals, as sort of cheesy as that sounds, but like I've always loved like dogs and cats and birds, and I remember trying to coax birds to sit on my finger when I was little, all the way up to even like mice and snakes and some animals that maybe people would be a little bit averse to. I don't know. Something in my personality just really makes me have a ton of empathy for living things. Around the barn, there were snakes all over the place because we were in a very field surrounded location. And so I don't necessarily like snakes, but I still like have compassion for animals like that, and I hate to see animals suffering in any way. I remember this one time I saw there was a snake in the yard at the barn, and I remember, my dad walking over to it and he dropped a rock on it, like a big rock, and it, in hindsight, it shattered its spine. And I remember just seeing this snake like twitching and writhing in the grass. And, before my dad could really like finish it off and hit it in the head, I just, I've been told like, oh, reptiles don't feel things the same way that mammals do, and but just part of me in my soul, like I don't know what it is. See, like thinking about that now, even like I want to cry. Like I just have this innate empathy for all living things, really, but especially animals. And I think that's because, I guess, I don't think animals can really be vindictive or greedy or, purposefully do bad things. I think, animals are kind of victims in a lot of situations because they're just alive and just doing what their instincts tell them to do, but then they have to live in this world and suffer due to usually situations that humans create. And so it really does. It just feels like it hurts me on almost like a molecular level, like a deep, painful level to see or even think of like an animal suffering. So when our dog Maggie came out of the tree line limping one morning, I was nearly inconsolable. Like, that really traumatized me. Sam and I had been eating breakfast in the kitchen. It was early in the morning, I think in the fall. I had started at my new school already, so I was just in first grade, but I was like having breakfast before the school bus came or something like that. And all of a sudden, there was this really like animalistic whining and scratching at the front door. And it just sounded so sad and scared and like weak that I'm like on the verge of crying just remembering it. But my mom opened the door and it was Maggie. My mom was in shock. She was like, "Oh my God," and like dropped to the ground, and Maggie just like crawled into her arms in the entryway, and she was bloody and she could like barely move. And I just remember my mom like cradling her in the floor. My dad came running up from their bedroom back in the hall, and he ran out and he's looking at Maggie, and my mom is just like sobbing over this dog. I mean, it was really her dog, right? and it was just chaos, and I was so scared. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen to our pet, and there was just so much blood, and I had just never seen an animal this injured this close before. Later, after my dad took Maggie to the vet and we knew a little bit more about her injuries, we learned that most of the blood had come from her hind legs. They were all torn up just with these massive, deep scratches in them. They, at the vet, actually had to shave off the fur on her hind legs and tail to be able to stitch her up. That's how deep the cuts were. It just looked like Freddy Krueger or something like that had grabbed her and really just, you know, tried to kill her. The worst part of it for me was kind of, I think, the impact of just how shocking it was. We didn't even know that she wasn't in the house. I mean, she slept inside at night, usually in the living room. She had been inside when we went to bed. I heard my parents saying she had been in the living room when they went to bed the night before. And then, I don't know, I guess my mom, when she got up, she thought my dad had let Maggie out. And when my dad got up, he thought maybe my mom had let Maggie out. And it got missed. And we didn't know how she got out because none of the doors had been open. We didn't have a dog door or anything like that. And for a while, it was just kind of a mystery to us about how she got out and got injured. Maggie really started behaving oddly toward me when she got back from the vet. You know, when my dad brought her home, she was pretty weak and definitely still recovering from her injuries. But, you know, I was excited to have her back. And she was just laying on the floor in the living room, and I went over to pet her. And she just let out this really low, quiet growl at me, and it scared me and it hurt because she had never done anything like that to me before, and I don't think really to anyone else ever. She was such a sweet dog. It was just really uncharacteristic of her. Even after she got better, she would avoid me or just stare at me from across the room, almost like she didn't trust me, or like she was almost like glaring at me. I still to this day just, I wish the whole thing wouldn't have happened, because it really did hurt, like, at that young of an age to not only see your pet go through something like that, but then, you know, she had always been so loving, and to just kind of lose that, it hurts when you're a kid. After the incident with Maggie, I think my parents started sleeping a lot less peacefully. Looking back, you know, now that I'm older, I feel like they were probably a bit more uncomfortable in this big house now that this thing had happened, and they probably realized, you know, their dog had somehow gotten out and they had no idea how, and, you know, this building was so huge and the property was so big, I'm sure it felt sort of like, you know, anything could be hiding in the house around the property, and it would be really easy to miss because there were just so many dark corners and so much ground to cover for only really two adults living there. I don't know if it was their energy at the time making the atmosphere of the house a bit more tense. You know, I think kids can pick up on that kind of thing, or I don't know, you know, if it was something else, but I started waking up in the middle of the night a lot. I still slept with a nightlight at that time, you know, especially in the dark rural area that I still wasn't quite used to, and there were no streetlights or anything like that. I preferred to have my, you know, small little plug-in nightlight in my bedroom. And I started waking up in the middle of the night, and I just remember all of the shadows that were cast by this nightlight. I started to see them moving. They just seemed somehow like bigger and darker than normal shadows. And I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would see them, and I would see them slowly start to kind of like warp and almost like sway against my walls. It got to the point where I would wake up almost every night and I knew that this is what I was going to see, and I would just pull the covers over my head and hide, and I would hope that I didn't see anything because it was such a long way. It felt like such a long way down the hallway to my parents' room that I was sure, you know, if I ran for it, they would get me. One time I did just leap out of my bed and run to my parents' room, and I woke my mom up, and it took everything I had to do that. And I got there and, you know, she thought I was having a bad dream or something, and I was telling her, you know, like, no, like, I see these shadows, they're moving, things are moving in my room and on my walls. And she just said I was overly tired and I was looking at them too much, and my brain was sleepy and it was playing tricks with me, and she kind of just sent me back to bed. One morning on a weekend, my mom kind of pulled me to the side after breakfast. I think Sam went out to the yard with my dad to mow grass or something. And she asked me how I'd been sleeping lately. And I said, you know, I thought I was sleeping okay, but I was still seeing these shadows moving in my room when I would wake up at night. I thought maybe she was ready to help me figure out a way to maybe not experience that anymore, but she kind of didn't say much about that or really even react to it. She just said, well, you know, okay, I think maybe you're having some strange dreams because I don't think you are really getting that much rest at night. And she went on to tell me that my father and her had actually seen me sleepwalking. And I was just kind of like, what? You know, like, I was six. I didn't even really know you could walk in your sleep at that point. So she kind of explained to me what sleepwalking was and said, like, yeah, your dad and I have been out in the living room watching TV a couple times now, and you've walked out of your room and you tried to walk out the front door. And she was like, you know, it happens to kids sometimes when they go through a big change. It's probably because of the move and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, she essentially told me that I had been getting out of my bed at night and trying to walk out of the house. I just remember the thought started forming in my mind. And as soon as it did, I knew it was the truth. And I just remember having this realization, like, oh my God, like, it was me. I'm the one who let Maggie out. I must have opened the door when I was asleep and I let her out. And that's how she got hurt. I just felt this guilt and shame and sadness that it had been me and it was my fault that my dog got hurt. And I knew it was me. My parents started putting special padlocks on our doors at night so I couldn't open the door and get outside, and gave them some peace of mind that I wouldn't hurt myself. They use the kind that has a number code built into the padlock, so there's no way I could walk around the house and, like, find a key and get out or anything like that. The next few times that I apparently sleptwalked after that, my parents said I would still try to go to the door and get out, but once I realized I couldn't get out, I would just kind of pace around the room in this sort of, like, big open area that was between the kitchen, living room, and the dining room. And I would just kind of follow a little path around the space there in my sleep walk stupor. One night, I guess, my dad mapped out the path that I was walking and kind of, like, stood nearby and watched me and drew it out on a piece of paper. He didn't tell me this until years later, like, just a few years ago. He said it really creeped him out, but I guess when he traced out this repetitive circuit that I would follow while I was sleepwalking, it turned out that it was a kind of big diamond shape and with an X through it. So basically I was walking the same shape as the pattern that was embedded on the doors and also on the necklace that I had incidentally also been wearing since I found it in the woods. And that was the path I was walking on while I was asleep. So up to this point, the things that I was experiencing in the house and really the things that my family had been experiencing, they were kind of disconnected for us. You know, there was Sam breaking his foot and Maggie getting injured, and now I'm sleepwalking, and they all just seemed like things that were kind of weird and unfortunate, but just unrelated. And then one night, and I really, like, I don't even know if I want to talk about this for this interview. Do you ever just feel like if you talk about something, something bad is going to happen? So one night I was falling asleep in my bed, and I was at that point where, you know, I was just about asleep, and I heard this loud, gruff whisper in kind of like a masculine tone, like as if it originated right inside my eardrum. And I heard it kind of like whisper yell my name. Tamara! And I jolted up in bed, and there was a massive man-like shadow standing at the end of my bed. And I say man-like because it had a pretty masculine frame, like kind of the wide shoulders that you would see on a male figure, but it had the head, like the shape of the head, it was like a rabbit. It was that fucking thing. Like, I fucking saw it plain as day. I saw it. Next time on The Barn. She said she got so scared that she had actually run the opposite way through the basement, through the maze of kind of rooms that was off the laundry room, and she ran out the other exterior door. Thank you for listening to the audio podcast miniseries, The Barn. This podcast was conceptualized, written, recorded, and edited by Kayla Durstein. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. It really does mean so much to me. Thank you.